Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yes. Back to history today. Although this is fiction, but history nonetheless. Death of a Red Heroine by, oh shoot, I said I was going to learn how to pronounce her name, or his name, right?
His name, yeah.
Q Zilong, probably,
oh,
right?
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, but it's Q, yeah, Q-I-U-X-A-I-O-L-O-N-G.
That's
and
good.
This is a book that was written in the year, or was published in 2000, and it won the Anthony Award, whatever that is, for the best novel, best first novel.
Ah.
And apparently this is the first of a series. Have you read any others?
Yes, I've read the first, I think it's the first four. And then they were doing another one that featured a serial killer, and I was like, and then they went, as they're talking about the serial killing and who it is, and somebody glanced at the little errand girl in the office and said, oh, she kind of looks like those people. And I was like, nope, done. Not reading that.
Oh, boy. So, yeah.
I know. But those first three or four are really good in the same way that I think this one is.
That's good. Yeah, this one was really good.
Yeah.
Really, really
good. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, so it was set in Shanghai in the early 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after the Tiananmen Square situation. So the culture is changing, or had changed abruptly. But changes were afoot. Let's just say that. And he's living through those things. He being
Inspector Chen.
Inspector Chen, right. Who was a great character. I was rooting for him. Mm-hmm. I liked him a lot.
No, he was good. And he's interesting because he kind of reflects China at that time, as it's shown in this book, which is he's conflicted too, you know. He's got an older mother who's a widow who just keeps going, if you just get married and have children. And he's like, oh, and based on traditional things, I should be. And it's not that he doesn't want to. He's just not met the right girl. And at the same time, he's been promoted quickly because he fits the party profile on what a good young politician is. And so he's become the inspector detective in charge of this special cases squad in the police force.
Right. Chief Inspector Chen.
Yes. And at the same time, he is a recognized poet.
Yes.
Lesser
published,
poet.
Yeah, published, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. A published poet. Who has also done, he learned English when he was young because he was sent to, you know, university where that he could major in that and everything. So he also has done translations of like mystery novels into Chinese and that kind of thing and back and forth. And so he's got this very literary side that's in contrast with what he needs in order to be able to be a good detective also. So he's filled with these contradictions. As its people are.
Yeah, and I really loved, and I know that I've missed the significance of a lot of the things that he was quoting, but it was just a really cool character that kind of leaned on that stuff in his head, you know. Things would occur, things would bubble up in his head, and it would be this literature, this piece of poetry. He even translated some T.S. Eliot into Chinese, so he had T.S. Eliot in his head. All things that I am not familiar enough with to say, oh, that was T.S. Eliot, you know? So, yeah. And then, but it was just a cool part of his character that he would, you know, quote that. And not only that, but he was always, you know, at night, he was like, you know, I want to do some of this. I want to do some poetry now. Or, you know, when he had some time off or something, he would, want to sit down and write. And I just thought that was a really nice, it made for a really good character, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I thought it was interesting that he saw the world so much through the focus of poetry.
Mm.
That it would just occur to his mind, or he would also know enough about the poets to go, well, this guy wrote this poet during this time in his life, but it also applied to this thing that he was thinking. And so it made me think of, you know, you and I and some of the stuff we've talked about in the podcast where we'll go, oh, this comes to mind all the time. Like the last one we did on Oppenheimer, we're like, we cannot ignore Takashi Nagai. Both of us thought of him the whole time.
Yeah, that's
he informed everything we were thinking.
What a wonderful thing to point out. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it colored our whole view of that movie. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you couldn't help, couldn't but do it, right?
That's it. And it in the poetry colors his view of everything. And so the reason I picked this book was, luckily, I managed to think of something deeper we can talk about later. But I just love the way that certain mysteries will open the door into a culture. And so we read The Case of the Missing Servant that showed us some more about India. And I'm trying to think, I felt like there was another one, maybe not. But, you know, sometimes, oh, The Feast showed us England at that time period in that hotel, that kind of thing. Not as much because we're more familiar with it. But so I really wanted to talk about this because I read it and I was so enchanted by the way that these characters all thought about poetry, because he would quote the poetry and certain characters would stop and go, oh, that was just lovely. You know, that, what is that from? And I'm like, we are not from a society that appreciates poetry like that. These people all seem to naturally have been exposed to it and appreciate it. Or they go, oh, you're such a poet. That was great, you know. And the food was talked about so much. And I just loved that part of it, too. So, yeah,
me too.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the basic book is this mystery comes up. Well, mystery, this murder case comes up. These two guys are off. They've snuck off for the day fishing. And they pull up a body in a plastic bag. And it's a young, well-groomed, beautiful woman. And so they report it. And then the quandary is it's been found in a very far out-of-the-way place. And then there's no there are no identifying factors on her or marks or anything. Mm-hmm. So no one knows who she is. But they think they should be giving it to the special cases unit. And so Inspector Chen and his, I guess, number one assistant, YU, are trying to figure this out. And so that introduces the fact that Inspector Chen hasn't been there for very long. And I can't remember, is he Inspector Chu? He must be Detective Chu. But, or YU, I'm sorry.
Right.
Detective YU. Yeah. He is resentful of Inspector Chen because he's like, oh, he's one of these political guys. He's on the fast track. He doesn't know anything. I've been working for years. And that soon fades, but so you understand that they both have to learn who each other is, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you was not impressed with Chief Inspector Chen to begin with, only because he got bounced right over him, because Chief Inspector Chen had joined the party with a capital P, right? He joined the party, so that made him kind of on the fast track, and that's one of these details, one of these things, you know, like you said, as this mystery unfolds, they don't know who the woman is at first. They got to figure out who that is. And then they got to try to figure out who killed her and all the interviews that they do. And through all of that, you're just seeing China, Shanghai specifically, and other cities too. They end up going to other places, but Shanghai specifically, what it was like in 1990. And in the midst of not only that, but they had that change, I don't know, big bomb that went off in the culture, you know, the Tiananmen Square thing. Mm-hmm. So that was a topic of conversation, and what the houses were like, what the apartments were like, what it was like if you were considered high in the Communist Party and you got like a mansion. As opposed to these places people. Now, they live on the floor of a building, and one floor of the building, it said four families live on this floor, you know, and it listed, you know, there's maybe a dozen people that are in this fairly tiny space, and rationing of food, you know, they could only buy so much of a specific item. But it was fascinating. It was really, the writer was really good. I actually don't know if this is a translated work.
No, he wrote it in English because if you look at Inspector Chen and then you look at the author's background, he's very similar.
Okay.
He knew English. He wrote poetry and translated it. Mm-hmm. And he came to this country, I think it was the year before Tiananmen Square.
Mm.
And he was getting ready to go back, and Tiananmen Square happened. And he's like, I think I'm just going to send for my wife or girlfriend, and we're going to stay here. So he wrote out, this book, you know, later.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very authentic because it was what he knew. And he's right. The next few books are still set in the 1990s. And I was seeing that later on people are saying, oh, he doesn't really know Shanghai like he thought he did and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know what? It's a better look than I've gotten from anything else. I'm not going to worry about
and
that.
And it's very well written. I mean, he's constantly doing an aside where he'll explain something culturally.
Mm-hmm.
And those are never boring. It's like when something like that would happen, you know, they're often in a book similar to this, I would be like, oh, can we please get on with the thing, you know? But I never felt that here. It was always interesting. And, you know, just explaining his inner feelings about what's going on because of, you know, how his mom felt about something or, and then it would stop and just explain the market, how the market worked, the market being like where he's going to go buy something. It was so well written that it was just a pleasure, the whole thing.
Yeah, it was really immersive. And the other thing that's really interesting is that, and then I guess we'll talk about other things, but the other thing that was interesting was the backdrop that's always in everyone's mind is the Cultural Revolution.
Mm.
Because people like they even explain, well, you know, the whole idea was everybody be taken care of for their entire life, but it's not really working out that way. So if you're an old high cadre person, but you don't have any money, we're going to give you a special important job. So it's like a very lightweight kind of a, just an official job like Commissar Zhang had. Mm-hmm. And you're nominally in charge of like the special unit, but really, and they may not realize they're not, but really what they are is it's a way to give them something to do so they can make a little money so they can still manage to have some sort of a living. Because it's the party going, we said it was an iron rice bowl. That might be one of the other books I've read, which meant it will never break. But, you know, guess what? It's broken. And so it's interesting watching them or like there's another character who I really love, Old Hunter Yu, who has come up with his own job for himself now that he's older and retired and he needs something to do and to make a little extra money too, you know, patrolling various neighborhoods and stuff. So it also shows here, everything harkens back to the old political days and they'll go, well, now was it Deng Xiaoping has been changing things now. However, this still went back to that. Nobody forgets it ever. It's so dominant in their lives. And the party runs everything. I mean, they say if you can get a one-bedroom apartment.
Right, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
It's great, yep.
That's basically the setup for the book, except it gets very exciting. It's interesting at the beginning because of the cultural stuff and the mystery. And at the end, it's very exciting because it's like a race against time from the political side.
Yes.
I mean, it is. And
right. Cause he's losing reputation and, you know, I won't get too deep until we say spoilers, but there's reasons that, he better solve it quick.
Yeah. They got to move fast and everybody knows it. So, the one thing I'll say, and I should have said this first maybe is, there are some descriptions of things that are sexual, very sexual in a way. I mean, and so if that's going to bother you, you can, if you're just reading the book, you can easily skip it.
Yeah. And it's not much, but it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Very FYI. Good.
Yep.
All right. Spoiler line here. Whack.
All right. I'm stepping over it.
Yes. So, so you're right. The Cultural Revolution is on their minds all the time. And, So we have this dead woman. Her name is Guan. They find out who that is. And she is, what did they call her?
She's a national model.
National model. Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, the party lauded national such model mythical worker. Communist models who the people were expected to measure up. You know, yeah, so, yeah, and a model meaning, you know, she's beautiful, right? They're taking pictures of her and things.
But also she's a model of how to live and think. So every time she's doing something, she's going somewhere and giving a speech about, well, as, you know, a Chinese communist, then I do this and I think this and you should too.
Yeah.
And so she is beautiful, but, and she's also just at PR events, basically.
Right, right.
But she has to live her whole life that way because it's communism.
Mm-hmm.
If you do something that's against communism, how can you be a national model for everybody? Yeah, of the party.
Reminds me of a influencer, a social media influencer.
You're right.
You choose that life, right?
Well, yeah. Because you get all the, you're supposed to get perks. It didn't look like she got perks, but yeah, she was chosen by the party and they take her around and trot her out and have her do this stuff. And everybody believed in her.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, she still had to earn her living at a department store and, you know, all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I'm not seeing the perks like I feel like I should, but, you know, but she got to go to parties, meet Deng Xiaoping, all the things.
Yeah, you know? And it was, you know, so one of the first things that happens is Chen is interviewing people that live around her. And there was a nice quote that says exactly what you said. She's the person he's interviewing is saying, you know, once she's talking about being a teacher, right? But once you're a model teacher, you have to be that. And then he says, so it's like a magical mask. When you wear the mask becomes you. And then she says, exactly, except it's not necessarily a magic one.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So she's simply saying, you know, that it's actually not great. You know, Chen is saying it as if it's a good thing. And she's saying, no, you know, that's kind of tough, you know, even though she was, you know, talking about being a teacher. And a little bit of it was eye rolling, you know. She's, I did it so well, and now I have to do it well all the time. And he's like, well, of course, you know. But they were talking about Guan, really, and so that I took to mean that's what Guan's life was like. She may have thought it was a magical mask at first, but now it's like, no, that's not magic. That's difficult.
Right, because what it comes down to in the very end is she was in love with somebody who was too important to have his reputation ruined, or he thought he was.
He would not divorce his wife.
And, right, because his wife was part of his reputation, and her family was very important. And this woman got a hold of some pictures that would destroy him, and instead he killed her.
Yeah, right.
And so it's the same old story in many ways. I mean, she really wanted love.
Yeah.
And she couldn't get it.
And the problem with this guy being high up is shortly after they interview him for the first time, he starts to get pressure from party people.
Chen does, yeah. Yeah,
Chen. There's someone named Lee who's like the party leader.
Yeah, and he's at the police station.
Yeah, he's like, you're going to have to fill me in, buddy. What's going on?
Leaders at the police station. Right, yeah, the way you do.
Yeah. And he says, we've got to think about the party. What is this going to do for the party? Mm-hmm. Not the truth, but what's it going to do if this comes out, and this is true, what you're saying here, what's it going to do to us, due to the party? And Chen is gently trying to say, you know, well, we're going to go where the truth leads us. And, but that makes Lee pretty nervous. So, he's just making, you know, so he says, okay, well, what's the motive? You know, he didn't have it at the time. He's like, I don't know. I don't know what the motive was. This is all circumstantial, right? This is what we think happened. And this is the road we're going down. And then he's just like, yeah, you need to be careful, buddy, because we're now messing with stuff that I don't know that you want to mess with anymore. Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is party leader Lee, or whatever his name is, we're not shown what he's thinking, but he's fairly pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
He's giving Chen the right advice for the political situation that they're in. and for his track up. And Chen doesn't seem to like he cares about his track up through the party.
Mm-hmm.
But Lee does. Lee's the one who had him put in that job.
Yeah, and Lee is an older man. You know, Lee, right. Lee is someone who knows the implications of what's happening. But he's not like pure evil or anything like that. He's
pragmatic.
He's pragmatic, but he's like, yeah, well, let's find out what the facts are, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't mean we won't cover it up. He doesn't say that part, but that's implied by him worrying about the party. Yeah. And then, of course, what you have, too, is Commissar Zhang. Is that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who, he's the one who's the old cadre member who's nominally been put in charge of the special cases. Lee is over him, too. But Zhang, mm-hmm. I thought it was really interesting, the part where they showed the day he was having and how frustrated he was by everything. Mm-hmm. That, you know, Chen wouldn't listen to him. He went off and did what he wanted without telling him, like he went to Guangzhou or wherever, that city. And then he doesn't get a low price at the movies like he should for being important. And the movie is not what he really wants to see. And there's people making out all over the theater, which is very bad behavior for party members.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care for it, this younger generation. So, and everything that was happening to the guy, you could really see it. I really felt bad for him. He was having a terrible day. But what he did, because he was having the terrible day, is go back and be mad at Inspector Chen. And he went, I'm going to write a letter to the party leaders going, you better watch out for this guy. He's been doing these things that don't seem in line with everybody. And the next thing Chen knows, he's under investigation and being warned off by older party members. And they're starting to shut down his investigation and everything.
Yeah,
and so,
little piece by little piece. Yep.
Yeah. And so I kind of loved this idea that it's the petty manager who's had a bad day and they take it out on a subordinate because they can. And we're all used to that idea. But the political power held, even by a guy like this, because everybody's so paranoid about the party reputation, was a real flip for me in going, oh my gosh, he's actually being warned off by Yi, this older woman in the party and in charge of this scary department. And what it made me think of was, I was thinking about, they have zero religion. Nobody even pretends to have any religion. Even when they go to the temple market, it's because it used to be a temple, but it was turned into a market.
Mm-hmm.
They still call it the temple. People will still pray and leave offerings over to the side.
Mm.
But it's not because there's really any place there to worship. It's just the one place they've got.
Yeah, and everybody's got a picture of whoever the chairman is in their house.
Yeah.
There was a little line there that, you know, you're supposed to kneel in front of it and pray.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right, no religion, yeah.
And so what I was thinking is, of course, when you have no religion like that, they do have a religion. It's the political party. Everyone is worshiping the reputation, and they're not doing it in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's human ambition and everything else. But it's being run kind of like a real creepy cult.
Hmm.
You know, where they're all kind of ready to tell on each other and ready to manipulate things, and it's all about how does the party look, because the reason they're worried about the guy who's the murderer is his father's extremely important, and as we said, his wife's family is important, but he's also what they call, he's the high cadre are the important people who have the mansions and everything. So he's a son of the high cadre. So it's like HCC children, high cadre children.
Yeah.
And the word in regular society is these are spoiled brats.
Right.
Well, that's not a thing that they want going around for the party, because if you're high cadre, you should be extra pure, and so should the children. So they're busy covering up all the wrongdoing, because they're just having parties and drinking and acting like any bunch of spoiled rich kids. And so suddenly the party is defending all these people, and that's why Yu has got to find this evidence, because he's going to get crushed as they move to protect the high cadre kid.
Yeah.
So it's really, they're all professing the faith to one degree or another.
Yep.
It's just, how is it practiced?
That's right. And remember, Detective Yu was the career police officer.
Yeah.
The one who'd been there a long time. And his family life was so interesting. Mm-hmm. Loved his wife, you know, he loved his wife. Mm-hmm. And he even brings her in at some point and said, yeah. I need you to do something. I need you to go to this event with me, but we have to pretend we don't know each other. And she was in, she said something like, you know, whatever you need, I'm in, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. Yeah. I wish I had highlighted that, but it was a very nice thing. It was like, if you need it, then I need it too. Mm-hmm. You know, basically saying, you know, I don't care what danger this is. I'm going to do it because you need me to, and I'm happy to do so. Yeah. They were a great couple. Yeah. So, yeah.
And she, and that read kind of like a little bit of a James Bond thing. Cause she was, it was told through her eyes, and she and her husband had been given two tickets to this big ball type, you know, like a karaoke thing and a dance thing. Yeah. And so it was a big party.
Yeah.
And she could go and be there pretending to be single, and Inspector Chen could be there because he had gotten stuck escorting an American couple on something for some diplomatic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all going. So Inspector Chen could pretend to be interested in her and dancing with her while she gave him information from her husband.
Right.
Because they were being watched so closely by the political people at this point.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I loved it. It was so fun.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. But, and she also, this is where the food comes in. I mean, she cooked two different meals, right? For, was it Inspector Chen both times? She cooked him a crab meal.
Mm-hmm.
And then some other thing where he was just like, this is amazing. This food's so good.
I remember a detail where Detective Yu was going to sleep that night after eating the crab. And he could hear the crabs that they hadn't cooked were still kind of scurrying around in their basket or whatever.
And blowing bubbles on each other.
Yeah.
To keep each other moist or something like that.
Wow. Yeah. How different. So different here.
Yeah. Well, and his Inspector Chen's friend, overseas Lou.
Mm-hmm.
Because he always liked stuff from America, which got him into trouble back in the day. But Chen never gave him up as a friend. And so he loved to cook, and he needed money to open a restaurant, he and his wife.
Mm.
And so Chen happened to have two checks from translating, and he generously gave them to his friend and said, here, go ahead and do it. And so through the book, you don't see a lot of details, but you hear about it a little, and he's opened the Moscow restaurant because it's super duper trendy to have Russian waitresses and Russian food, yeah. And it's swamped from the beginning. Yeah, it was really funny to me.
So good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was neat. Yeah, and then I think he later got nailed for that. He's like, what are you doing giving money to somebody else? And, you know, they were really watching him and asking him all these questions. And, you know, so he was
why did you go to this restaurant that's a Russian style restaurant? Yeah.
What is that? What kind of thing is that for a party person to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so Chen was, you know, he had this, he wasn't all in, he wasn't all out, but he was just like, you know, in his poetry, some people would read his poetry and say, I think I detect something here that means you're not in, you know?
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of that. And then his mom didn't want him to be a police officer at all. And that was another stressor for him. She wanted him to be a scholar like his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that tension as well. And until the end, when she was quite happy.
You did a good job.
Yeah,
because when they of course get the evidence, they prove it. Although it was so drastic when the next day he's like, so now we're going to interrogate them we decided last night they're guilty based on the evidence you provided. He and his friend have been executed. He's like, the friend didn't do anything. Like, nope, he was guilty too.
Oh, shoot.
And it's just damn.
And I loved that run up to the end too. So he was talking to Lee, I believe, the party boss, the party leader. Mm-hmm. And in talking to him, you know, he's like, I'm pretty close to this case. I'm pretty close to having it finished. And then he says, well, we're going to give you this great new job. And it is, now you're going to be in charge of traffic in Shanghai. And this is an extremely prestigious position, which it was. Mm-hmm. And but then he was also not officially removed as the chief inspector. So he kind of had two jobs for a minute. And yeah. The whole talking about when he first showed up at his new job and there was a secretary there and he had to figure all this stuff out. He had a pile of papers and he had all this stuff to do, and how he let the secretary go at 6 o'clock and he was there till 8. I mean, all these details, it was just great. And then he brings in a person that he knew who was a traffic cop. And said, I have an assignment for you.
And wasn't I want that old you Hunter to go Yee
watch.
You, I mean.
What's that?
Wasn't that old Hunter Yu? That was Inspector Yu's father.
Yeah, yeah, it was, been, you're right.
He had been a top detective in his day.
That's it, old Hunter.
But he retired, but he still had all this knowledge. And he had kind of pulled Chen aside earlier. And said, let's go have tea at this tea house and talk to him about the case and some of the stuff he found out just inquiring around.
Yeah.
And so then he pulled old Hunter in.
Right, old Hunter in. Yeah. Yep. And then says, I have this assignment for you, and what I need you to do is go to this neighborhood. I recommend this street, but you can decide. Yeah. And I want you to sit there, and I want you to arrest anybody who doesn't have a license. Yeah. And old Hunter, you knew exactly what he wanted.
Yeah.
He was like, yep, on it.
And he did it.
And he went and did it. Oh, I loved it. Yeah. I thought that was so great. Provided
the crucial evidence, the car.
Yeah. So what they did is they found...
she had been put in the trunk.
Yeah, they found the murderer's car. Wu Jiaming was the murderer, but there was a... he kind of had a cohort, and his cohort was driving Wu's car. And so old Hunter Yu arrested him and impounded his car. And because he didn't have a license, and they knew he didn't have a license, right? So, because I guess there's some, you know, to get a license was kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. Anyway, then they got to question him and then get the last thing that they needed was this person's, and also the evidence in the car itself. So, so they got everything that they needed. And, because at that point I'm like, well, what's he going to do? Now he's got this more than a full-time job doing traffic. Mm-hmm. And it's lucrative, it pays him more, and everything's great. And then he still pulls it off. And that was all because the party leader had not pulled his other title officially and knew what he was doing, I think. I
think so, too. Yeah. He just was trying to get him out of the way.
Right.
And he's like, well, see what you find.
He's getting out of the line of fire. And I think he was being nice, right?
Yeah.
He was doing that and saying, you know, you do what you need to do, but now you're not going to be standing there as a target.
Yeah, he wasn't telling him any of that. You just had to kind of figure it out from reading it. And then the other thing I liked about that part was how everybody came together and you suddenly realized all the different people you'd been introduced to in the book who considered themselves friends of Inspector Chen. And Inspector Chen hadn't really thought about it one way or the other. You know, one was the guy who drove the special car, which he didn't use very often. But when he did, this guy's very friendly, really liked him, understood traffic, all this stuff. One of them was Dr. Jia, who had done the autopsy, maybe, I think. But he came in specifically at a time when people were around, so he could loudly say in front of everyone, I want you to introduce me into the party. I'm not an activist, but there's a long way for me to go before I can prove myself, but I'm an honest Chinese intellectual with a minimum conscience. And this is when he was in disgrace, and Chen's like, wait, haven't you heard about the news? And he goes, I haven't. He raised his voice, waving his hand, adjusting his gold-rimmed glasses. Nor do I care. Not at all. Listen, you're a loyal party member. That's all I know. If you're not qualified, no one else in the whole bureau is. And so he's very dramatic.
Love it.
About it. And he had been feeling really discouraged about everything. Chen had. He's like, oh, this is never going to work. I should just give up. And then it says he knew that the doctor had paid him this visit to show his support. And he goes, he'd suffered, the doctor had, a lot during the Cultural Revolution. And he didn't really want to join the party, but he was doing it to support him, to support Chen. And he says, and it was not just for him, Inspector Chen realized. It might be a losing battle, but Chen saw he was not alone in it. Mm-hmm. Detective Yu, Peking, Old Hunter, Overseas Chinese Lu, Ru Ru, Wafeng, Little Zhu, and Dr. Jia Tu. Mm-hmm. Because of them, he was not going to quit.
Yeah.
And that's when he really puts it together. And you look at all those characters and you go, yeah, because we've been seeing them each time through the previous few pages coming up and going, hey, I got the hand of this envelope and they said I should send it to the secretary, but I feel like this is directly for you. So it would give him evidence he needed.
Right.
If there was evidence in it, they were going to make sure he got it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to be diverted by the party who's trying to get rid of him.
I love it. And that was sort of a rebellion of those people, mm-hmm. Against the party as well.
Yeah.
It's like, we're not going to let you protect this guy.
Going to protect Inspector Chen, who's trying hard to do an honest job, and that's what we would like.
And how hard it is to do, it was inspiring in that way, how mm-hmm. hard it is to do the right thing in the face of somebody who can kill you overnight, right?
We decided you're guilty, you've been executed.
Yeah, most of us in the United States don't have that dire a circumstance, but it was an inspiring model. That's why I like Chen mm-hmm. so much. Mm-hmm. I just liked him. Yeah. And we haven't really talked about Ling. And Ling was the girlfriend. Now
girlfriend.
Yeah. I don't think we ever found out who she was a daughter of. All we know is that she was the daughter of someone really high up.
Yeah.
We don't know how high up, but high enough that she can do stuff.
Yeah, because... Mm-hmm. They'd met in college.
Yeah. That was a neat story. That was
liked that too. And then she got a job that took her away from Shanghai.
Yep.
Or was assigned an opportunity or whatever. And so, and that was the other thing he did was he found out she was back around in, available, not right close, but, and he was like, okay, am I going to give up or am I a survivor? And because what he realized, I thought this was interesting too, he really felt an affinity with the murder victim because she was having to keep this magic mask on, but she also had to survive in this world. How do you do it? And she was doing it the best she could. And he's like, sometimes you make bad decisions, but she was fighting for what was important to her and everything. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm also a survivor like that. Mm-hmm. I also have things I do that they don't like, but I can't talk, my poetry and my whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he wrote a letter to that old girlfriend, mm-hmm. kind of just hinting, and she was able to pull some strength back off a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And then she showed up. Mm-hmm. That was nice. Nice for Chen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that was interesting, and we don't know what their future is, but it seemed like that was it. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens in the next book. Mm-hmm. But you know.
I do know, and I'm not saying. So, but then also there was the woman he met at the beginning.
Yeah, and that was a very interesting deal.
Yeah, who was a journalist, and she'd interviewed him mm-hmm. as a poet/policeman, mm-hmm. and she was helpful to him.
Yeah, she was. And her situation was interesting. So they had dinner together, mm-hmm. and then things were getting pretty far along. And then she said, and by the way, I'm going to be going to be with my husband.
I'm married.
Yeah. He's like, really?
Yeah. And he defected to Japan early in their marriage. Mm-hmm. So she was kind of in a no man's land.
You're right. Right. And And he was like, did the right thing there too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he also was helping her at the end mm-hmm. with any influence he had because she wasn't getting her passport approved or her visa or whatever it was. Uh-huh. And he was able to put in, when he was in good standing, a few good words to get it moving along. And then when he went down in standing, she's like, so nothing's happening with my visa anymore? You know?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm real sorry about that, but I got nothing here.
Yeah. Right.
And in fact, you could tell when he was in favor and when he wasn't. Because then later, when he's back in favor, he's talking to a guy who's like, hey, congratulations on that big case getting solved, because it was in all the papers. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, your friend, I just found her thing. It was in a corner. And I'm going to get that approved right away. You know?
Yep.
It's like, oh, right. Okay.
Wow. What a way to operate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it was just
great.
It was funny because the normal people put up with all this stuff because they didn't have a choice of, you know, trying to get a bigger place to live, like the inspector or detective Hughes family, who his father had been given like 3 or 4 rooms to live in.
Mm-hmm.
But none of his children or other family members had anywhere that they could live. So all these different families are each, as you were saying, living in one room. It what should have been enough for, you know, in the old days, it would have been like 2 or 3 people living in this house.
Yeah.
So they're all crammed in. And, but that was all they could get. They were on a list to get a bigger place. But they couldn't.
Yeah.
And, at the end of the book, the reward for him was, you know, it was like an Inspector Chen's going to get this. And Detective Yu, we have put you at the top of the list to get a bigger apartment. You know?
Yeah. Right.
So it's interesting because they all manage.
Mm.
And there are good things to life, which is reflected in the food and the friendship and the hot parties and stuff. And
the marriages, to the dancing. Yep. All the relationships. Right,
marriages, yep. Kids, all the things.
Which is the point of life, isn't it?
Yeah, but this politics everywhere is just oppressive.
Absolutely it is, yeah. But even there, you know, they can live, or they did live. But you're right. It's oppressive and it's ever present. Yep.
Well, and it is the way, and that's why I guess I say it's like a religion too, because you and I hopefully are always informed by our faith. I mean, you're not thinking about it top of mind all the time, but the decisions we make during the day are based on our moral grounding, which is our Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's therefore kind of like their religion is. I mean, kind of like their politics is. They're not thinking about it all the time, but they know how they should act and how it works and what they have to do in the system. And I hate to reduce what we're doing to that, but you know, every day as you're making decisions, you know, you hold the door for that annoying person behind you. You know, whatever it is, this is how you should be.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. You know, I do my best.
Yeah, you speak charitably of somebody who... It's easy to not give it them a charitable thought based on the actions you've seen.
Right.
You try to do your best, that kind of thing. So, anyway.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So, one other big thing is, so this is called Death of a Red Heroine. Mm-hmm. And it mentions a book called Dream of the Red Chamber, like at least 3 times.
Oh, many more than that.
And I learned... I'm looking at a Wikipedia entry here. Dream of the Red Chamber, or The Story of the Stone, is an 18th century Chinese novel considered to be one of the 4 great classical novels of Chinese literature.
Yes.
And it says it is known for its psychological scope and its observation of the worldview, aesthetics, lifestyles, and social relations of Haiqing China. Haijing China.
Must be... Yeah.
It's Q-I-N-G, so I think that's Zhe.
Yeah. I think so.
How can we tell? Of course, I have missed any significance of what was being shown here, but the fact that the title is clearly a riff on this. And so I did read the plot, and I said, oh, that's interesting. But it said that there's like so many characters. There's like... It says, Dream of the Red Chamber contains an extraordinarily large number of characters, nearly 40 major characters, and over 400 additional ones. So that's a lot.
And you know, Hannah in high school was going through a phase where she loved all things Chinese, and so she actually read this book.
Oh, really?
Or maybe college, but I think it was high school.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I did not, but I was aware of it because of that. I wasn't aware of the fact that this is the part I really loved when I was looking at the summary of the plot, which is that in the novel's frame story, a sentient stone left over when the goddess Nua mended the heaven eons ago wants to enjoy the pleasures of the red dust, the mundane world. Mm-hmm. The stone begs a Taoist priest and a Buddhist monk to take it with them to see the world. The stone, along with a companion, is then given the chance to learn from human existence and enters the mortal realm. So he's reborn as precious jade, thus the story of the stone in the Dream of the Red Chamber book. So I was just reading that going, this is so Chinese. It's so Asian. Mm. The idea of the stone being reborn so it can see what life is really like.
Yeah.
And, and so that book is extraordinarily important to Inspector Yu's wife, and various other characters will also mention it. Mm-hmm. And I think in the next novel or two that this author writes, it's still referenced.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. As being important.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's like, for me, The Lord of the Rings. You know, you're continually right. Going, oh, this is just like
ooh, that's
this
fantastic.
Part.
I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was talking with a friend today and she was talking about, we'd been talking about something else where people, even though they were old, were acting kind of with knee-jerk reactions to things that had, like, parents had inflicted on them when they were kids and they'd never gotten over it. And I suddenly went, having just almost reread The Lord of the Rings during this Lenten period, I was like, oh my gosh. It's just like when Frodo is attacked by the knife, the edge of the knife from the Nazgul, and it's working its way towards his heart, and it gets taken out, but the mark is always there. It's always, you know, I'm like, ah!
So oh, wow.
That's me and the Dream of the Red Chamber for them.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yes.
This is crazy. So I'm looking at it in Amazon, the mm-hmm. Penguin edition.
Mm-hmm.
There are 5 volumes. And the first volume is 540 pages long.
Holy moly.
So is it really like 2,500 pages?
Well, it did say it was super long. Or it had all those people in it.
Yeah, the last volume is 384. Yep. The Saga of the Stone, volume 5. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, there you go.
There you go.
And the thing that's interesting, too, and coming up against this and reading this modern novel where this older classical book is referenced so much, and I was telling you this, which may or may not interest anyone, but I have been watching with my daughter Rose this K-drama, super fun fantasy, everyone, called Korean Odyssey. But that's just the translation. It is really a kind of a riff on another one of the 4 classic novels, called Journey to the West, which is about a character called Monkey. And Monkey is seen all over the place. Like, in fact, Hanuman in, you remember Bajrangi Bajan?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the monkeys were revered and everything. So right. See, these threads from China and various other places go all over the place like
wow.
this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so in Journey to the West, I was able to find a 2-book graphic novel that simply depicted this classic novel and the adventures of Monkey having been thrown out of heaven because he's such a monkey, so bad. And having to accompany this Buddhist monk who's learning how to be wise as he goes on his adventures. And so this Korean version, I read all this because the Korean version has a bull demon, a monkey demon, a pig demon in human form in this story that we're watching. And I'm like, oh, here they are right here. I get it. But this ancient classical book is informing a modern Korean TV show.
Wow. Yeah.
And to the point where you're going, oh, that's so monkey. Oh, there's the bull for you. Mm-hmm. And of course, I know nothing, but these are so influential that they're still picked up again and again.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so even though it said 4 in that Wikipedia entry, I clicked on that.
Oh,
and
no.
Then it's given me 6. It says, the group of classic Chinese novels usually includes the following works. Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Water Margin, Journey to the West, The Plum in the Golden Vase, Dream of the Red Chamber, and The Scholars. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
This says, does these say work because... are among the world's longest and oldest novels.
Yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
I know. I tried Journey to the West as an actual book and had to give up very soon. I was super happy to find the graphic novels, which is not something I usually
That's
say.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea to make them graphic novels. Was it long?
No, it was, well, the book itself was insanely long, and that was just the first volume. So here we are again.
Yes.
Very long. And this, that book, I'm looking it up, it was written in the 16th century.
Wow.
During the Ming Dynasty. It says it's arguably the most popular literary work in East Asia, but it's probably harder to link that to this murder mystery than the Dream of the Red Chamber.
How interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Learned something new. This is cool. Yeah, I feel like I learned a lot from this book, just period.
I did. It was so insightful as to what China was like then, and I know it's different now, but surely all the things that informed those people then have been carried on and still inform the modern people now. And I know the author has something like, it's 12 or 14 books, and like I say, I stopped reading when it was the one about the serial killer, but I know he wrote a modern one in like 2020 or something that was about during COVID.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and kind of linked Inspector Chen. I think it's called like Inspector Chen's Kitchen Mystery or something like that to the Judge D books. Have you ever heard of those?
I have not.
So Judge D, D-E-E, is a fictional, they say semi-fictional character. But there were all these mystery stories written about him, with him as the person solving the mysteries, right? And so in the, so it says they appeared in 18th century detective stories. So there was somebody who was a Dutch specialist in Chinese things who discovered these Judge D historical mysteries. And he took that character and then wrote his own Chinese mysteries, Chinese-ish. He was an Orientalist, they say, as back then they would have called it. And so he also wrote Judge D mysteries. And he translated them. So then he, after he translated it, he used the character, made his own, continuing the series. And they're popular and everything.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah, so I've looked him up on Amazon, and there's 13 books. And they're all Inspector Chen's, and then even Love and the Murder in the Time of COVID. And Inspector Chen Mystery, Book 13. Yeah. And the one right before that, like I said, Inspector Chen and the Private Kitchen Murder.
That's it.
Love it. Love it so much.
Because he reads a Judge D book that's similar to a mystery that he's trying to solve.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So there's all kinds of stuff going on. Yeah. And I don't know that this is, like I said, deep in a faith way, except thinking about how religion informs everything for these people. And they're so unified on how they understand it. They all get it.
They all do. Yeah.
They're very,
they're all coming from a common understanding. Yeah. Very good.
And we seem very slipshod when I compare us to them. I'm like, we're all over the place.
We are so all over the place. Yeah. I remember, it didn't seem like that long ago. In one of our podcasts, we talked about, if people aren't reading the Bible anymore as they used to, meaning that the Bible was the story that everybody kind of culturally had in common, whether they were a believer or not, they understood what was in it. As we move forward into the modern world, that's becoming less and less true. And what is our common story right now, ma'am? Maybe Marvel movies. I'm not sure.
In American,
it's got to be films. If films have got to be our common thread, but even
maybe TV shows though, because there's so many TV shows now. I don't. Yeah. You say only Murders in the Building.
Yeah,
I love it. Most people have come across it, or Ted Lasso, that kind of thing. So it's not the golden age of TV, but it's an age where enough of those things come across. It's still not informing us in the way it should.
Yes.
But it does help form a common understanding. And I think TV had that back when it was just networks. Mm-hmm. Everybody talk about the ending of Seinfeld. Did you see that? What did it mean?
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
And so like now I can say to a lot of people, we're every night watching an episode of Taskmaster. And we're on episode, we're on series 12 now.
Wow.
Yeah, super fun. Well, we'd watched a bunch before and we picked it up again at, I think, like series 9. And we've just been doing it every night because, you know. And so, but I can say that. And have you seen Taskmaster or heard of it?
I have not.
Right?
No.
Okay. Oh, well, it is really fun. And I won't bother everybody with describing it here, but you should try it. So anyway.
I love it.
Yeah, it's just a nonsensical game show that's just very enjoyable.
That's cool.
And anyway. But a lot of people you say that to, my husband said it during an icebreaker session in an online meeting, and someone went, I just finished binging season 19. You know?
Wow.
And there were four people who all went, ooh, let us tell you about this. So it's not that we're sharing it, but for those people, you know?
Yeah, there's just something about that. Mm-hmm. Well, when I start my own religion, it's going to be based on Firefly for sure.
Oh my gosh. Yep. Oh, that's it, buddy.
That's right. And Wash spake saying, I am a leaf on the wind. That'll be
my
sermon.
Watch my fly. Yes. I know it.
Yep.
You make me think of Arrested Development when Troy is talking. He goes, five seasons in a movie, buddy. We're going to get it. If I commit suicide, I'm going to say it's because of Firefly. So they start doing it again.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Too fun. What a wonderful book.
Yeah, sorry. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I really, really did. I was just like really into it. So thank you very much.
I'm so glad you liked it.
Yes, you bet. Another gem. All right, so what's next for us? It is a movie, Vikram Veda.
Vikram Veda.
Yeah. Duh. What are we in for on that one?
Oh, man, it's an Indian movie. Mm-hmm. South Indian.
Ooh.
Oh, it's got Vijay Sipakathi. Mm-hmm. There's two famous Vijays in South India. This is my favorite Vijay.
Excellent.
It's basically about a cop who's trying to catch a master criminal. And the master criminal will let himself be captured, but he insists on telling the detective a story, a moral story to think about.
Okay.
And I'm going to have to look up the Vedas, but that's a series of stories. So this is a riff on this series of Indian stories. And I love it because it shows how important stories are in our lives.
Ooh, yeah.
Because this guy's great. Communicating through the story and letting the guy open his senses to there's other possibilities of what's going on.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I'm very much looking forward. Yeah,
oh,
wonderful.
Good.
All right, that sounds perfect. Okay.
I didn't plan to have two kinds of mysteries but in a row, but here we are. It's
you
mystery
bet.
Season.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
Okay.
Okay, well, happy Easter, everyone.
Yes, happy Easter. Mm-hmm.
You bet. And I hope you have a fruitful Easter or a pleasant Easter, a fruitful Lent. We say a fruitful Lent and a joyous Easter.
Joyful.
How's that?
Yeah, joyous. Okay, joyous is the right. Yes, and it goes on until Pentecost. So, you know. You've got weeks and weeks of celebrating
Easter.
That's
right. There's parties. There should be
Fridays.
Karaoke.
Oh,
there should
and
be
dancing.
And dancing. Yep.
Yeah. Even if you don't know how, just do it.
Just do
Sign.
It. Love it. Love it. All right. Well, take care, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.